Hi, everybody. I'm Don Landis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Don.
Absolutely delighted to be here. I have had a fantastic weekend. I can't express enough gratitude to the committee for inviting me to come and participate this year, for inviting my wife to come and participate. I want to thank Bob and Linda for being just terrific hosts and being the good friends that you are, because we see you around the AA campsite, you know what I mean, and we run into each other at different events, and it's always a joy. And we get to meet lifelong friends here, and the book tells me I'm going to commence a common journey shoulder to shoulder with these people. And those were so much fluffy words in the book when I got here. But now, you know, I'm 18 years sober, and I've got friends I've had for 18 years. And let me tell you something. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hadn't done anything for 18 years except drink. You know, I hadn't done anything consistently. And that kind of consistency in my life and having people like Bob and Linda means the world to me. I want to thank Barry for calling me up and taking good care and inviting me out here, and for Jim being a great chairman of this conference. And I'm a big believer in getting involved in things like this. I've been involved in committees on conferences for 16 of my 18 years. I didn't do it my first 2 years, and I've done it every year since. I'm involved in the Mount Baker Roundup every year, the Gratitude Banquet. And why do we do these things? If you're not doing them, you know, I guess to the untrained eye, you might look at it and you might think, what are you trying to be, a big shot? You know, trying to stand out in AA. Let me tell you, being a big shot in AA is like being voted most popular on your cell block. It's a... I suppose it's an honor, but you could probably do without it. And the truth is, I'd like to tell you that I do these things because I owe, because of the debt that I owe for the man who took the time to carry the message to me. And that would be true. That's not really why I do it. I really do it because it's a tremendous amount of fun. And let me tell you something about sobriety for this guy. If at some point in my recovery, my sober life didn't become not equal to my drinking, but significantly better than the drinking life, I'm going back to the bottle. And I know that about me. And there's certain actions that I have to take around here to make this thing alive, to make it enthusiastic, to make it fun. And I got to tell you, when you're in the middle of the room and you're cutting up and you're shucking and jiving and you're cracking up and you're cutting with those guys that are shaking hard and moving fast in Alcoholics Anonymous, it is joyous. And I thought this thing was never going to happen for me, not in a million years. I want to tell you, for the people that have attended the entire conference that came here on Friday and now the sincere people that are here on Sunday, you've been very, very fortunate this weekend. You know, the talk that Linda gave Karen gave and Johnny gave and Phil gave and Eileen gave, you'd have to go pretty far and look pretty hard to find four recovery talks of that caliber anywhere. Those are amazing talks. I think we should give them a hand again. Those are amazing. And as I begin my talk this morning, I want you to keep this one thing in mind. 4 out of 5 ain't bad. I can basically suck and you got nothing to complain about. And what are you going to do, go home and say, conference is great, last guy, but the rest of it was beautiful. Sponsorship, the how and why of it. I like that part in the book that says this is the how and why of it. First, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. I love that in the book. Really? That was news to me when I got here. And sponsorship is a subject that's near to my heart, very important to me, and something that is an active part of my life on a daily basis. I sponsor a lot of guys. I am sponsored. I'll get some statistics out of the way. My sobriety date is 9/16/91, so I'm about 18 years and a month sober. I have a home group. It's the SOS Men's Group in Bellingham, Washington. We meet on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. at St. James Church on 14th Street. If you show up there on Wednesday, I'll be there. I do the setup there. I'm there at 5:30 every Wednesday. I'm even there the Wednesday for setup. The district is once a month on Wednesday. I won't be there for the meeting. I'll come set up that meeting, and then I'll go take care of my commitment at district. I have a sponsor. His name is Dave P. He's about 30-something years sober. He's one of the nicest men I've ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's an easy-does-it kind of guy, and someday maybe I'll be half the man that Dave is, because he's just cool as a cucumber. He's cool as the other side of the pillow. I once in a while see him get upset, and it excites the hell out of me. I saw him lose his temper at a conference once and kind of react in an aggressive manner with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just hugged him. It was just, it was great. You got mad. Your face got red. I'm so proud of you. I'm really tired of that spiritual act he had going on until that moment. Very fortunate to be married to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my beautiful wife, Eileen. We have a sober home, and I'm telling you, the phone's always ringing, and somebody's always coming across the threshold, and somebody's ass is always falling off, and we're always grabbing that spiritual stapler and tacking it back on and talking to them about the book, and it is exciting. It's exciting. It's the best life I've ever known. And for a user and a taker and somebody that was of no value to anybody in the world, including myself, to be able to have men call me on a daily basis and share their life with me and take this journey with me, I'm overpaid. And the thing you need to understand is if I was right about what I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was and what it would be able to do for me, I'd have missed the whole thing. And every good thing in my life today, everything that I never saw coming, everything I couldn't have planned for myself, as the book said, the things to come to us when we place ourselves in God's hands are better than anything we could have planned ourselves. What the book doesn't say is I had to have a sponsor for that to occur. I owe it all to sponsorship. I don't owe a great deal to sponsorship. I don't owe some of the good stuff to sponsorship. It's all about sponsorship. And let me tell you why I'm a real alcoholic. And what does that mean? Does that mean I drink more than the other guy? Doesn't mean that at all. Does it mean I drink whiskey instead of beer? Has nothing to do with it. What makes me a real alcoholic is I might look like a heavy drinker, and a heavy drinker, given a sufficient substitute, can actually put down booze and walk away from it. Isn't that something? Show up at the doctor. Doctor says, you drink anymore, your liver's shutting down, you're going to die. I don't want to die. They stop drinking. They show up in a courtroom in front of a judge on their latest driving under the influence. The judge says, you show up here again one more time, you're doing a year. Year flout, no conversation, you're going away. Guy goes, I don't want to go to jail. Stops driving drunk. Alcoholic sits in the same courtroom. He starts wondering what jail's going to be like. Because he knows he's going. It was confusing to me when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because our stories were so different, yet we were in the same room sharing the same program of recovery, and we were all saying we were alcoholics, yet I would sit next to a guy, and he was periodic. He wouldn't drink for 4 or 5 months at a time. And then he would drink, and he'd go out on what he called a bender. And then there was some woman there that drank white wine every night. White wine? Isn't that like a warm-up for breakfast? I don't understand those kind of drinkers. And the beer drinkers, I really don't understand. Why would you, it's just too much energy, isn't it? 18 beers later, I was lit up. Boy, I can do that in 6 minutes flat. And all these different types of drinking. You see, I'm getting caught up in the brands and the volume and the periods that you drank and how much you drank and the way you drank. And that's not what makes an alcoholic. Doctor's opinion is really close that we have all these different stories. We come from all these different backgrounds, different levels of education, different types of childhood. What's the one thing that connects us together? It's the phenomenon of craving, the allergic reaction. See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that when I put alcohol in my system of any type, it kicks off an allergic reaction, and I can't stop drinking. And even if I do stop drinking, I want to drink. And my ability to stay away from it after I start drinking diminishes as my progression of my disease goes on. And I didn't know that. I spent a lot of years out there fighting my alcoholism with self-knowledge, which is akin to bringing a knife to a gunfight. And it didn't work for me, and I almost died out there on that. And I was fortunate enough to find a magic program called Alcoholics Anonymous on September 16, 1991. And I didn't come here because I had a spiritual awakening. I didn't come here because I had a moment of clarity, and I realized I suffered from a spiritual deficiency, and perhaps a spiritual program such as Alcoholics Anonymous would be the answer. What happened to me the weekend before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous had been happening to me all that summer, and it wasn't very anything interesting. You see, about 8 months before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had lost the best job I ever had in my life. And I had gone into this job, and I had done some remarkable work for them, and I worked in quality control in the aerospace fastener industry, and I was hired by this company to come in and change everything for them, and I did that. I did a great job for them. Then the owner of the company made a terrible mistake, the kind of mistake as an employer you never want to make with an alcoholic. He put his arm around me one day, and he said, Don, I just want you to know, you've done a great job here. Now, I don't know what your alcoholic ears hear when somebody says something like that to you, but what I heard was this. Don, you've done a great job. You really need to slack off. And what I started to do was bring my old behavior into that job. And pretty soon I'm missing work again, and I'm showing up at work drunk, and they're starting to talk to me about my drinking. And I got fired from that job for my drinking. Now, I had never been fired from a job for my drinking before. And maybe it was something that had to happen to a guy like me to finally start taking a look at myself. And I called up my sister in Simi Valley, California, and played the victim card. And I said, Pat, they threw me away after all I did for them. And I said, can I come stay at your house and get on my feet? And she said, well, you can come stay at my house, but if you drink, you're out of my house. And I told my beautiful sister, who I love as much as anyone on the planet, I won't drink, I promise. Because by this time in my story, I can lie to the Pope, it's no big deal. And I was in that house for 8 months until I got sober, and I drank every day in that house. And if you don't know how you do that when you're a, you know, when you're a, when they're watching you, I don't know, maybe you're not a sneaky rat like I am. Because I got no problem drinking around your schedule. I'm unemployed. What time do you go to work in the morning? 7 a.m.? Bars open. And at the end of my drinking, you need to understand this. I was not drinking so I could kid myself I was better looking than I was, or had the courage to go walk across the room to ask that girl to dance, or to feel like my friends meant something more to me. My disease had progressed to the point that I was doing oblivion drinking. I was doing light switch drinking. I was getting the whiskey on board hard enough and fast enough to shut off my head, to make the voices quiet down so I could get drunk, so I could go into a blackout, so I could come to in this room I was mooching off of my sister to meet the hideous four horsemen. Terror, frustration, bewilderment, despair. They sat on the end of the bed and they watched me and they waited for me to come up from my last drunk, and then they talked to me about my life and my voice in my head, and they asked me questions and they made statements. And they said, who are you going to hurt today, Don? Who are you going to rip off today, Don? You know, you've taken every good thing that's ever come your way and you've torn it to shreds, and now you're in your last relative's house to have anything to do with you, your beautiful sister, who's the only one on the planet that'll have anything to do with you, and you're stealing her money and you're lying to her and you're breaking her heart. And I don't know what you do with a head like that on hangover mornings, but I just took another pull off the jug because I can't face that stuff, and I got to make the pain go away. And as my friend Johnny said last night, I know what makes the big hurt go away. And I thought it was going to end that way. I walked up to my brother-in-law in September of 1991, and I asked him, I'd gotten an unemployment check, and I said, Larry, can I borrow your car? I need to go cash my check. And he asked me a very unusual question. He said, Don, will you be coming back? And the reason he asked me that question is I had borrowed his car a few times that summer and gone out on little vacations, we'll call them. And I'm an alcoholic. At 12 and 12 says that my outstanding characteristic is defiance. So I got right in his face. I said, Larry, how dare you? You know, the last time this happened, I apologized to you. I opened my heart to you. I told you how sorry I was. And now you're giving me a hard time. I don't really need this. And he felt terrible. And he took his car keys out, and I snatched the car keys from him. And I'm so grandiose, as I walked out to the car I was borrowing from the man whose house I was mooching the room off, I thought to myself, there better be gas in it. The grandiosity of the alcoholic, the inability to form a true partnership with another human being, the inability to feel any real gratitude. People help us out, and the minute the heat's off, we completely forget the favor. We completely forget that anyone's done anything to us. Delusions of entitlement that are the cornerstones of my drunken life. I had it coming. You should do this for me. You have more than me. You should definitely give me some. Why would I want to earn it when you can just give it to me? And it makes perfect sense in my alcoholic mind. I went down to the liquor store to cash my unemployment check, because that's where alcoholics of my type cash our unemployment checks. And as I was standing in line, I had what our book refers to as the thought that precedes the first drink. And for me, that thought always sounds like this, what's in a half pint? And I got the half pint, and we drank that, and the half pint got lonely, so we drank another half pint, and I thought, I can go visit those friends in the valley and be back in 45 minutes, and I'm gone. 3 days later, I'm driving up the hill to face that family I'd done over one more time. One more time, I've taken their hope, their faith, and their trust, and I've torn it to shreds. And you need to understand this. Driving up the hill to face that family I'd done over one more time, I love them no less than I love them at this very moment. But I can't serve two masters. I only got time to serve one, and that's King Alcohol. And you get between me and a drink, I'm going through you, I'm going around you, I'm manipulating you, I'm telling you what you want to hear, but bet your bottom dollar I'm getting to the drink. But I don't know anything. thing about alcoholism, so I don't know how to explain that to you. So I say things like, I'm sorry. I don't know why I do these things. I don't mean to treat you this way. Can you give me another chance? And it got really hard for my family to give me those second and those third and those 30th chances when I roared through their life year after year like a tornado. And in those brief moments of recovery that I experienced, they talk about in chapter 3, feeling like I was gaining control right before I found out I lost even more control. In those brief moments, I didn't understand after 2 weeks of sobriety why people were still mad at me. Why after 3 months of sobriety, why it wasn't all in the past. Thank God for a magic program called Alcoholics Anonymous that corrected the only mistake a loving God ever made in my case. You see, God made my eyes looking outward instead of inward. And where you're concerned, I have 20/20 vision. I've always had a gift. I can look at pretty much anyone on the planet, and I can tell you almost instantaneously with no effort what you're doing wrong. It's only part of the gift. The real magic of the gift is not only can I tell you what you're doing wrong, I can tell you what you should be doing instead. But the other side of that coin is where I'm concerned, I'm a blind man in the wilderness. I can't see myself. I have no ability to look at myself, my thinking, my actions, anything until I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous corrected that mistake. And if nothing else, the inventory process and the steps that came out of that inventory process took my eyes off of you and put them back on me. And that's important because that's where my sobriety is lived and that's where my life is lived. I learned something very interesting in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor taught me this. He said, the quality of your life is based on the quality of your actions. I didn't know that. I thought it was about intentions. I didn't intend to do that. My intentions were good. I intended to show up. I intended to pay the bill. I intended to call the IRS. I intended to say I'm sorry. I intended not to sleep with her. But I didn't realize that the world judges me by my actions. I walked into that house that I was tearing apart with my alcoholism, and I found out my brother-in-law wanted to report the car stolen and my sister negotiating him down to a missing persons report. And the Simi Valley police were on their way up to do the follow-up work. Now, I don't know if you've ever been up for 3 straight days drinking and doing outside issues, but the police usually aren't who you want to talk to. I had warrants for my arrest in 2 counties, so I start yelling at my sister. Oh, great, I got warrants. I'm going to jail. Thanks a lot. Because now it's her fault. I go outside of the house to wait for the police because I don't want the interview to go on in front of the family because I have no idea what I'm going to be saying, but I'm fairly certain I'm going to be lying. And and the black and white unit rolls up and it says canine unit on the side of it, and I think, great, they brought the dog. Like I'm in any shape to make a run for it. And the cop got out and he started asking me those hard, tough questions because after all, they are trained professionals like, where were you? And, most of what I remember is illegal, so I'm making up a story about a bachelor party that got out of control. And he's looking at my eyes really hard because they're like Chinese roadmaps and they're rolling up in my head. And so I break his gaze and he breaks with me. So now we're talking and dancing in the front of the house. And I don't feel good. I'm getting nervous. My hands are wet. And I just want to divert his attention. And I see the dog in the back seat. And I go, hey, is that your partner? And he says, well, yes, it is. And he walks over and he opens the door. And this dog gets out. German Shepherd. Not a hair out of place. Like a Rin Tin Tin reincarnate. And with no prompting on my part, he starts to relay facts to me about the dog's life. The dog is 3 years past mandatory retirement. They can't retire him. He's too good. The dog has participated and more arrests than any dog in the history of Ventura County. The dog has participated in more arrests and rescues than any dog in the history of Ventura or Los Angeles County. This dog was so phenomenal that the officers took a collection out of pocket to send him over to Europe for international competition where he kicked butt on German Shepherds. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I said to the cop, I said, well, that's a phenomenal dog you have there, sir. And this thought flew in the back of my mind and it stuck like a dart. The kind of thought, the minute you think it, you know it's the truth. You may want to deny it, but you know it's the truth. And what the truth was, is this dog had done significantly more with his life than I had done with mine. And I hated that dog. And I didn't know, but that was going to be my entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked back in the house, and they were done with me. My family was done with me. My brother-in-law wasn't around, and my sister was talking to me, but she couldn't look at me. And I think we all remember that when people that we love, we've taken their last bit of hope away. We've hurt them one time too many. We've taken the straw that's broken the camel's back, and it's just too painful. They still love us, but they just can't take any pain. Every human being has a threshold, and they just can't take any more pain. And my sister couldn't look at me. And she loves me more than anything in the world. She couldn't make eye contact with me. She had to look at the floor or look away, and she said, "You have to go. You're tearing my home apart. You're tearing my marriage apart. We can't live like this. I don't want you to die, but you got to go." And I'm a big guy, but I'm not a tough guy, and I'm an alcoholic. An alcoholic never goes easy. We never say, "You're right, I'm sorry," and we go out the door. Man, I turned on the waterworks, and I turned in an Oscar-worthy performance. "No, please, I'm so sorry. Give me another chance. I'll go to AA and everything." And then I look behind me to see who said the last part. And it's not like my sister believed I was going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous or get sober. My first 2 weeks in Alcoholics Anonymous, my sister was driving me to meetings and picking me up from meetings. You know what that makes you feel like when you look the way I do and you get in your older sister's car at the end of the evening and she's driving you back to her home? She's going, "Oh, Donald, what'd you learn in AA tonight?" I can tell you I'm sober because of sponsorship and the loving God and the steps and the enthusiasm and the beauty of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you I'm sober because of all that. But I could tell you that I stayed alive and made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because of the love of one of my family members. I would have died out there in the streets if it wasn't for my sister. I owe a great debt to my family who hung in there with me. And a lot of us have that same experience. And I'm glad that I had a sponsor. And when I got time to make amends, he understood the book and he read the book. He understood there's a part in the book in the amends where it says a mumbling apology that we are sorry will not fit the bill. There's years of reconstruction ahead, and we must take the lead, lest we be like the farmer who comes out of his cyclone cellar to view the devastation of his farm, only to remark, "Don't see anything wrong here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" I'd have loved to have been that farmer with my amends. How about you? "Hey, I'm not drinking anymore. I don't drink that bad whiskey. Sorry I hurt you. I'll never do it again. Let's call it even. What do you say?" I'd have missed, what a gift I would have missed, making the amends the way the book talks about making them. What a gift I would have missed. I walked into the Simi Valley Alano Club. I do not remember my first meeting. I was detoxing pretty bad. I did that pretty much for my first 30 days. I had audio hallucinations every time they read chapter 5. It didn't matter if it was a man or a woman, young or old. At some point during the reading, the voice reading would morph into that guy from the night gallery in the Outer Limits, Rod Serling, and it would sound like, "Rarely we've seen a person fail, who's truly followed her path." Cannot or will not completely give themselves a simple program. And I'd grab my head, and my sponsor would put his arm around me. "It's okay, Don. It's going to stop soon. Win, spots, win." My second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the most important thing occurred in my sobriety from that moment to this moment. A big guy named Lou I walked up to me, had a little guy with him named Mark E., and he said, "Hey, Don, this is Mark. Mark's going to be your sponsor." You see, in my first home group, their opinion was that picking a sponsor was far too important a decision for a newcomer to make. And that was probably wise. You know, some of that crap that floats around Alcoholics Anonymous, we say it. There's things that we say here that I think we've been saying for so long that we don't think about them anymore. We don't think about them. They said it to us. We say it to them. But we don't stop and think about what we're saying. Get a sponsor. Find somebody that has what you want. Well, let me tell you what I want when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm looking for a pharmaceutical rep with a spare Cadillac. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the slickest, hippest, coolest, quickest to fist fight, sitting in the back of the room, making fun of the old timers, I don't read the damn book, cruising the newcomer girls, gonna die from alcoholism, loser. That's what I'm looking for my sponsor. That's who I want to be when I'm new in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want the cool kid. I want the tough kid. I'm a wannabe tough guy. You think I want a guy that reads the book and talks about God? Oh, that's just embarrassing. You'd have killed me dead if you let me pick my own sponsor. Instead, you brought a guy over that was on on fire with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was on fire. I tried to tell him about my big deals in life. He'd just tell me, what lucky boys are we? We're the luckiest dogs in the yard, Don. Luckiest dogs in the yard, for God's sakes. We're in Alcoholics Anonymous. We get to watch the resurrection of human beings and participate on our own. We're so lucky. Really? And let me tell you, enthusiasm in Alcoholics Anonymous is like a tidal wave. You can only push it back for so long. You can only build your seawall up so high. It will win out. One day I stood next to this guy for 1 minute too long, this guy who was on fire with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and whoosh, I just burst into flames. And I've been on fire with Alcoholics Anonymous ever since, and he gave me that. He gave me that. That gift that he gave me of enthusiasm for the program, the recognition of how fortunate we are just to make it into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, just to be able to be members of Alcoholics Anonymous, just to be able to do the things that we do, to come together like we come, enjoy it one more day, a gift that for a long time I didn't think I wanted. And then once I wanted it, I knew I'd never have it. I knew I'd never make it in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I had tried everything I could think of for 6 flat years after I had the experience of self-knowledge. And self-knowledge is when it ain't the cops telling you, and it's not the district attorney telling you, and it's not the doctor stitching you up and you don't feel the needle, and it's not your family, and it's not your employer telling you that maybe you got a problem with your drinking. It's you. When you have that quiet consciousness with yourself and you say, drink is killing me. I got to do something about this. Every negative thing in my life, every heartache, every failure, every broken dream and broken promise, broken heart, right there with it is a drink of alcohol. I got to do something about this. And that's called self-knowledge. But if you haven't been to Alcoholics Anonymous, and even if you have, if you haven't read our book, you haven't gotten to the part that says for the real alcoholic, he will absolutely be unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. And I didn't know that, so I brought a knife to a gunfight for 6 years. I almost died out there trying to fight my alcoholism with the things I bring to the game naturally. My intellect, my emotions, my instincts, these things that serve me well in other areas of my life will kill me dead where the game of alcoholism is concerned. And I don't know from what I suffer from. I don't know that I have a disease or an illness or a malady or whatever we're calling it this year that resides mainly in my mind. That this will never fix this. I don't know that. I know that if I sponsor myself, I have an idiot for a sponsor. I heard a guy say once, you know, I used to think that the brain was the most magnificent organ on the human body, and then I realized the brain told me that. I'm a street guy. Street guys will understand this. When you meet another man, you size him up. Can you take him in a fight? Does he have something you want? Does you have something he wants? You kind of size. We don't sniff each other's tails, but it's just short of that. So they brought my new sponsor over to me, and I sized him up. Little guy, thin guy, bald head, wire-rimmed glasses. Thought to myself, I'll have this guy wrapped around my finger in no time. And we sat down at a table, a round table like that, in the Simi Valley Alano Club. He had his big book with him. He always had this book with him. He never went anywhere with it. He used to carry it in his truck when he went to the job site to go framing. He'd carry it into meetings. He'd carry it into the house. It was just like his wallet to him. Everywhere he went, this book went. He'd go in a coffee shop to have breakfast and sat on the book. It was always with him. I never saw him without his big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he sat down. He started talking to me about what I'd be doing. Now, he didn't ask me what I was willing to do, and he didn't tell me what other people did in Alcoholics Anonymous. He just started telling me what I'd be doing. Now, I didn't know there was other ways to sponsor. I had never been sponsored before. I didn't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. If I did, I probably would have put up a fuss. And if I wasn't 2 days sober and severely detoxing from alcoholism, I probably would have put up a fuss. But to tell you the truth, I was too sick to argue. And I wasn't making much sense of what he said. But I remember he said something right off the bat I really liked. He said, Don, I'm not going to ask you to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm not currently doing myself. I thought that sounded very reasonable. Then I found out he went to 14 meetings a week. Never said no to an AA request. And his idea of a good time is one of you hits a rough spot in the road. You call him up 2 o'clock in the morning. He'll get dressed, go down to Denny's, have coffee with you, and talk you through it. He used to say that the extent that I'm willing to be inconvenienced for my fellow alcoholic, that is the true extent that I walk with God. So I had a spiritual zealot on my hands, and I didn't know it. And he got me busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. He got out that meeting directory and he circled all the meetings I'd be attending. And why he's circling these meetings? Because he did this all in about a breath, as I remember. These are the meetings you're going to be going to. Every meeting that you attend, I'm going to circle here. And you're going to be there. You're going to be there half an hour early. You're going to stay half an hour late. Now, the other thing is they'll have a secretary at every meeting. You're going to go up to that secretary. You're going to say, I need a job. Around here, we call them commitments. Commitments are an essential part of staying sober. Around here, Don, commitment is an act. It's an act of gratitude. You'll see people come up to the podium, talk about how grateful they are, and they'll walk by the trash can. You will take the trash can out. People will know you are grateful. He said, Don, people go to meetings on a regular basis. You can go to a meeting every week. If you don't have a job there, you're a visitor. Only becomes your meeting if you're willing to take an action of gratitude and say thank you. This thing doesn't happen by magic. And I'm listening. He asked me the directory, and now this white directory with black writing, it's just all red with circles and stars. And thank God all the meetings were at the same location. That's the only thing to save my bacon. I didn't have to figure out, if I could get to that door, I could just get in the meeting and figure out, is it a book study tonight? Is it a 12 and 12? What are we doing? Discussion. Didn't know what was going to happen from night to night. Took me a while to figure that stuff out. But it got me busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, years ago, I was speaking at a conference, and I got done talking, and a young guy came up to me, and he asked a really good question. He said, hey, man, let me ask you something. How long does this AA take? Because I got to tell you, it's taken forever. And I gave him that answer out of the book that I had been taught, and I talked about, by the time you get it halfway into your amends, you're going to be amazed, and these things are going to happen, and the problem's going to be removed, you're not going to be interested. If you are tempted by drinking, your recoil is from a hot flame, you'll find this new attitude has been given you. And I just quoted the book to him. And I lied, because that wasn't true. Because what we share here is our experience, strength, and hope. So what I should have done is I should have shared my experience with him. And my experience, if anyone asked me that question today, if he asked me how long does AA take, I have to share my experience with you. It takes 30 days. That's my experience. Now, you asked me how long it takes AA to work. You didn't ask me how long it takes to get well. You didn't ask me how long it takes to recover from alcoholism, because that would have told you about the steps. But you said, how long does AA work? How long does it take to work? Well, I found out how powerful Alcoholics Anonymous was at my 30-day coin. I was going to that meeting that night, and I was still living in that house. I'd torn apart my alcoholism, but now they're talking to me. Man, they're still a little sheepish around me. Still got an eyebrow up. They're still waiting for me to get drunk, trust me. But they're talking to me again. And my sister's very happy. She's asking me questions about Alcoholics Anonymous every night I come into the house. She's waiting up for me. She works for a living. She's waiting up for me. I'm going to the 6 o'clock meeting, the 8 o'clock meeting at the Simi Valley Alano Club. I'm having fellowship afterwards. There were nights I didn't get home until 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. My sister's waiting up for me. Asked me questions about Alcoholics Anonymous. That's weird. She got kind of a boring life, huh? I don't know why she's doing that, but all humor. I don't know what's happening to me. I don't know what's happening to that house. I'm a newcomer. I couldn't have recognized the power that was involved if it fell out of the sky and it hit me, because it was hitting me and I didn't know it. I tell my sister that in Alcoholics Anonymous, they give tokens for various lengths of sobriety. We give a 30-day, 60-day, 90-day, 6-month, 9-month coin. And in Southern California, if you're lucky enough to get a year of continuous sobriety and every year afterwards, they'll make you a cake. And they'll put a candle in that cake for every year of sobriety you have. And they'll put a flame on it. They'll light that candle. And they'll sing happy birthday to you. I told my sister, but I go, I've seen it. It's embarrassing. It's pathetic. Until it happens to you, then it's pretty cool. And I told her I'd be going up and I'd be getting my 30-day coin. And she said, oh, that's terrific. And I do what tough guys do when they take a 30-day coin. I go, that's no big deal. It's just a coin. And I went to that meeting that night. And I took my coin for 30 days. And the guy gave me the coin, and he went to hug me, and I didn't hug him. I said, I don't hug, because tough guys don't hug. And so I took the coin, and I sat down like tough guys sit down. You don't look at anybody in the room. You sit back in your chair, your arms folded. And I got my hand in my pocket, and I got the coin between my thumb and my forefinger. And I'm rubbing the numbers off it, because I can't remember the last time I went 30 days without a drink. And of all the things I accomplished in my life up to that point, I had done some things, I had seen some things, and they weren't all bad. Nothing had ever meant more to me than that coin sitting in my pocket between my fingers. I couldn't figure out why. And I couldn't figure out why I was fighting so hard to hold back the tears, because I just wanted to cry. I wanted to tell everybody how much I loved them, how much it meant to me. Thank you for taking me in. That everybody was done with me, and I thought it was going to end that way. And he gave me back the very last thing my disease took from me. Why would a guy like me drink for six flat years after he knew the drink was killing him and it was tearing all the good out of his life? See, alcohol is magic in my system. Alcohol, no matter how bad my life got, I could put whiskey on board, and if I drank enough, it produced a feeling in me that vaguely resembled hope. No matter how bad my life got, I could tell myself those lies, drunk on the couch, that tomorrow it was going to be different. Tomorrow I'd clean up those files I had hidden in my desk. Tomorrow I'd call the IRS. Tomorrow I'd say sorry to my mom. Tomorrow I'd start paying the money back. Tomorrow I'd start being faithful to my girlfriend. I could tell myself those lies and feel hopeful on the couch. And the last thing my disease took from me was that hope. It didn't even give me the hope when I drank the whiskey, and all I could drink was for oblivion to shut my head off, and I couldn't even lie to myself and tell myself maybe it was going to be any different, because I knew it wasn't going to be, and I knew I was going to die from this thing. And at 30 days sober, I looked around these people, and I didn't know any of you 30 days earlier, and I knew everybody in the room, and I knew a little bit about you, and I'd been in some of your homes, and I'd met your kids, and I'd seen the cars you'd driven because you had given me rides. And you'd shared your spirit, strength, and hope with me, and I'm 30 days sober, and I'm trying not to cry because I'm a tough guy, and I'm holding this coin. And I'm thinking, why does this mean more to me than anything I've ever felt? And I walk into that house that I had torn apart with my alcoholism, the disease of alcoholism, it had driven through this home, and it had taken the pictures off the wall, and it had smashed them on the mantle, and it had broken the hot tub, and it had stolen the cars, and it had broken everybody's heart. And they didn't know what they had done wrong to deserve it. They had taken their own inventory, and they didn't understand that they were up against something bigger than them. They didn't understand that it wasn't personal, and they wanted to know, and they were crying in their beds at night. They were afraid to answer the phone after midnight because they knew I was on a concrete slab somewhere. They had watched my life run out my sleeves. They had a front row seat for it, and it had torn apart everybody's joy and everybody's love. They had watched me come from a graduating class athlete in high school, go up the ladder in business, only to find out I had my ladder on the wrong wall, and tear my life apart with drinking. And they watched it all. And they knew I was beyond human aid, even though they didn't have the vocabulary for that, because God hadn't they tried everything they knew to help me. And I walked into that house that was still smoldering from the disease of alcoholism, and my sister walks out in the living room, and she's got a cupcake. And she's got a candle in it. And she's lighting the candle, and she's saying, I know you're only 30 days sober, but I got to tell you, Donald, for you, that's like a year. Happy birthday. And she gave me a big hug, and the tears flowed, and I started crying. And I didn't realize it for days what had happened. And what had happened without my permission is something as beautiful and pure and powerful as God's love in the guise of Alcoholics Anonymous had attached itself to me in those meetings. My sister had never been to Al-Anon. My sister had never been to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. She dropped me out in front of that clubhouse and picked me up in front of that clubhouse that first 2 weeks. She hadn't met my sponsor yet. She hadn't met any of you. There's a part in the book that's remarkable to me, and it talks about the new man walking into our fellowship. And what it says is, there's something in our eyes that lets them know that maybe they found safe haven at last. And I'm here to tell you that when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous and we take the simple actions dictated by a sponsor that are suggested to here, something happens to us. Something attaches itself to us. There's a change in our step. There's a change in our eyes. There's a change in our vocabulary. There's a change in our action. There's a change in the way that we treat people. And Alcoholics Anonymous follows us into the other areas of the community. It follows us into our homes, occupations, and affairs. And what kind of member of Alcoholics Anonymous you are is going to make a great impact in those areas of your life. And I was trying to do everything my sponsor told me to do in those first 30 days. And damn it, I wasn't perfect, and I was still detoxing, and I was in a lot of trouble. But I know I was doing the most important thing you could ever do in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was trying. You keep your smart guys. You keep your guys. They're looking to be hip, slick, and cool. Give me somebody broken in half by the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous who's a trier. And I'll show you a guy who's going to have an outstanding spiritual experience and a life beyond his wildest dreams. Show me a guy who can try. Not succeed, just try. Understand that what this thing is about is trying. It's about suiting up and showing up no matter what. And I had a sponsor that taught me the ground rules of Alcoholics Anonymous. He told me a commitment is a commitment is a commitment. Commitment isn't something you do when you're not going to the movies with your girlfriend. A commitment isn't something you do when there's a baseball game. I'll tell you, I'm 18 years sober. I've never seen any of those silly shows on TV. I've never seen American Idol. I've never seen CSI. Hell, I've never seen, what's that one? The doctor one. You watch the reruns of sometimes. I don't watch any of that crap because I'm not home. Now, I want to tell you, I'll stack my life against anybody. Somehow, I've managed to miss all that great TV and still have a good life. Isn't it amazing? Do you know how many, in just 18 short years, you know how many fads have come and gone in the world? And I just missed them all, and somehow that big hole isn't there. You would think I'd be empty inside, wouldn't you? Oh, God. I just want to watch American Idol and vote. Is that wrong? You know, I'll tell you a funny story about that. And I'm a big sports fan. I played a lot of sports, and I watch ESPN late night every night. And that's how I keep up with sports. I watch the highlights, you know. And I can't tell you last time I watched a sporting event from beginning to end, you know. I use a little golf Sunday afternoons to go to sleep, but, you know, that's about it. But so years ago, and I'm talking like, God, this must be 10 years ago now, I get invited to speak at this big meeting in the South Bay in Los Angeles. And it's a big meeting. It's kind of a big deal to get asked to speak there. And usually you have to have 10 years of sobriety to even be considered to speak there. And I'm like 8 years sober, so I think, huh, they know about me, huh? Bend the rules, you know? So the ego steps in, you know, and I'm going to go speak this meeting. I booked the date. They booked me months and months ahead. So the date gets close, and I realize it's Super Bowl Sunday. Oh, those sons of bitches, I think, you know? And now I know what happened, right? I know what happened. They already asked everybody, and nobody wanted to go because it was Super Bowl Sunday. Oh, no, I'm speaking already, you know, right? So they have this big, all the guys they sponsored are having this big Super Bowl party, and I sponsored this one guy in the restaurant business. It was amazing, man. It was just platefuls of shrimp and beef, and it was great. And I'm there in my little suit, and, you know, I look at the watch, you know, we're in the middle of the first quarter of the Super Bowl, and I got to drive 2 hours down south to go speak at this meeting because I made a commitment. So I leave the big party, and I'm driving down. I'm bitter. Why do I have to do this? You know, I'm sure they got somebody there, probably lives right next door, walk and give their talk, they might miss a quarter. What the hell is it? You know, I got to drive 2 hours down here, 2 hours down, 2 hours back, this isn't fair, you know. And I get to the meeting, I give my little talk, and I get done with my talk, and this guy comes up to me after the talk, and he goes, hey, my name's Anthony, I liked what you had to say. And I go, well, thanks, Anthony, it's kind of you. And he goes, listen, you're in West Los Angeles, right? And I go, yeah, I go to meetings in the Pacific Group. I'm in the West Los Angeles area. He goes, yeah, well, I just got a treatment down here. And tomorrow, I'm going to be staying at the Salvation Army shelter in Santa Monica. And I need to be able to get to some meetings. And I said, that's great. Here's my number. You call me tomorrow. We'll get you to a meeting. Anthony called me the next day. That night, Anthony asked me to sponsor him. And I sponsored Anthony until we moved and came up here. And Anthony's now 10 years sober. Okay? Now, Anthony isn't 10 years sober because of me. Anthony's 10 years sober because he took the actions dictated in the big book. But I will tell you this, okay? When you say yes to something in Alcoholics Anonymous, what will happen if you're like me is your head will try to tell you what the value of that action is. And I'm here to tell you that God runs this thing, and I don't know what God's plan is. I don't know if anything I do is going to make a difference. And the things I think that are important probably aren't. And the things I think are insignificant could be incredibly powerful. I don't know because I don't play God anymore. But I'm telling you, I know Anthony was glad I kept my commitment that night. And I know I was glad I kept my commitment that night. Because that man was a big part of our life for the time we were there. He's a beautiful human being. And he had been slipping around Alcoholics Anonymous for probably 4 or 5 years. And he went from that. He happened to hear a guy talk. And he took that action. He took that leap of faith and saw that a man was going to be in his area. And said, I'm going to be in your area. Maybe you could help me. And he reached out his hand, and I was able to help him and put him in touch with a whole group of guys I was sponsoring. And now he had a family, and now he had a home group, and now he had support around him. And I watched that man's life blossom. And that's what we do here. It's not about what the one individual does. It's about saying yes. My sponsor taught me the power of saying yes to things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was a wonderful guy for about 30 days. And didn't make a lot of demands on me, just wanted to see me at the meetings doing my little commitments, and I really liked the guy, and he came up to me at 30 days sober, and he said, hey, I want to ask you a question. I notice you don't work. Why is that? And I built up a little rapport with the guy. I kind of liked the guy, so I told him the truth. If I had known how he was going to react, I probably would have lied. And I said, well, I don't have to work. I'm collecting unemployment. Oh. You want to upset your sponsor? Have a sponsor that swings a hammer for a living about 50 hours a week and then tell him you don't have to work because you're collecting unemployment. I mean, I'd never seen him angry before. And his eyes got real red. And you ever seen somebody so angry that when they start to talk to you, they realize what they're about to say is inappropriate, so they stop? So he was like, "Hey, Don, let me tell you, the thing is..." "Look, Don, the point I'm trying to make..." And finally, he stammered out, "Is there any reason other than pure laziness that you can't get a job?" And I thought about it, and I said, "No." So he gave me a direction. He said, "I want you to call up the state of California tomorrow and tell them you no longer require their assistance." And I said what every good newcomer should say: "Hey, I have 8 weeks left on that claim." And he says, "I didn't ask you how much time you had left on the claim. I asked you to take an action. You tell them you don't need their assistance anymore or find another sponsor." And I said, "Wait a minute, man. I thought this program was suggested." And he had already started, because now I'm an expert on the program. And he had already started walking away from me, right? And he heard me say that with the back of his ears. "I thought this program was suggested." And man, I knew I was in trouble the minute I said it, because he just locked and said, "Arr!" And he, you know, he spun around. It was back in my face so fast, it was like a cartoon character. It just set me back. And he said, "Let me tell you something, Don. They say that crap around here all the time, but you're really sick. And everything that I say to you from this moment forward, I want you to assume it's a direction. And we'll let you know when you pass into the suggestion phase of the program." And I'm at the turning point. Because what he was asking me to do was very unreasonable. I hadn't worked in over a year. I was $80,000 in debt. I had warrants for my arrest in two counties. I had these big deals. Big deals, man. I'm new. I got a cart full of wreckage. And you're asking me to give up the only income that I have. It's my money. I earned it. That's why they have that unemployment program. Justification and rationalization. My two best friends followed me all the way into Alcoholics Anonymous. What, you think they stopped at the door? Two best friends you had to justify and rationalize every dirty action you ever took, every drink you ever took. Play that victim card so it's really not your fault. You can drink with impunity. I got all those skills coming in the door. I'm just not drinking whiskey. I'm that same messed up individual. I'm a liar, a cheat, and a thief. My first home group, they used to tell me alcohol didn't make you what you were and exposed you for what you were. I didn't believe them until I started to lie, cheat, and steal in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what that's like. If you get up, finally get back to work, it's 4:30 in the morning, you got to go work that day. You know, you got no money to eat. It's not your fault. Why does your sister leave that damn purse right on the washing machine next to the garage where you're going to walk out? Why do you do that? Why do you tempt me? Don't you know what I'm like? And you're hungry. You know, it's going to be a long day in the sun. You know, you're just going to look. I'm just going to take a peek. Oh, God, she's got a lot of cash. Now it's really going to be hard. And you think, you know what you do? You justify and you rationalize, don't you? I'll just put that money back on payday. And you take a 20. You put it in your pocket, and you know that it isn't the right thing to do, but you're okay with that. I mean, because you used to drink whiskey every day, and you're not drinking. Okay, I'm not drinking. And I did that 4 or 5 times to my sister, until finally one day I went to take that money out, and I couldn't take it anymore. Something had happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous where I just couldn't do it anymore. I knew I was going to stay sober if I kept doing that. And the funny thing about that is when I made formal amends to my sister, And that was one of the things I copped to. I said, "You may not be aware of this." And when I told her that, I expected to be very upset. And she said, "Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. I thought I was losing my mind." I go into my purse, and I knew I had $45. Now I got $25. And then I go into my purse, and now I got $45, and I got $65. I go, "What's going on with my mind? I'm too young for this to happen." Because I'm so glad you told me. So I called up the state of California. I told them I no longer require their assistance. And they said, "Oh, did you find a job?" And I said, "No, but I'll be looking." And they said, "We thought you were looking." Oh, that's no big deal. I'm an alcoholic. I just went, "Oh, I meant looking harder." You know, I just switched right into that. So I sit down with my sponsor to plan my financial future. You know, I want to take a moment and I want to read something to you. Because I'm about to talk about what my sponsor did for me. And I've been in some of the, you know, panels, and I've heard some of the things that have been said here. And I don't want some of the stuff that was said here. I really think I know what's behind it. And I think it might be misinterpreted if you listen to it wrong. And sometimes we'll hear people say, "Look, I'm not here to be a marriage counselor. And I'm not here to be a job counselor. And I'm not here to figure out your finances. And I'm here to take you through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and get you a conscious contact with a power greater than yourself, and you clean up that wreckage, and that's not true. That's not what our book says. I just want you to know that I understand what you're saying, that you don't want people to think we're a social organization, but anybody that sponsors anybody knows what comes with the territory. Page 161 in our big book says, but life among Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings and visiting hospitals. Let's see what else it is. Cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences, explaining the disinherited son to his irate parents, lending money and securing jobs for each other when justified. These are everyday occurrences. No one is too discredited or sunk too low to be welcomed cordially if he means business. So what my sponsor didn't do is he didn't say that, listen, I'm not going to take on any of your problems. What I want you to do is take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you can't talk to me about this. But what he did do is this. When I talked about the warrants in my life, and I talked about the 80 grand I owed the IRS and my big deals, he said to me, he goes, these are your big deals? These are the big ones? I said, yeah, I think they're fairly significant. He goes, you're wrong. And I hope I never forget what he said next. And what he said is, Don, let me keep it simple for you. You only have one problem. That's that you suffer from a disease called alcoholism. And what that means is you have something that wants nothing less than to kill you slowly and take a large bite out of anyone that has the misfortune of caring about a loser like you. And we'll let you know when these other things are problems. And what I heard was I didn't have to pay back the IRS. I found out I was wrong. And the reason I bring all of this up is my sponsor got me in lockstep in Alcoholics Anonymous and got me working the steps. And then out of nowhere, like an assassin, like an evil ninja, he would just do things to me about the problems in my life. And one day he knew I wasn't going to work the next day, and he goes, you got tomorrow off, right? I go, yeah. He goes, great. Be outside about 8 a.m. I go, oh, where are we going? He goes, we're going to court. That was no big deal. We're always going to court for somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're always showing up to support somebody, stand up for somebody, wave goodbye to somebody, you know. And so I said, who are we going for? And he goes, oh, going for it? We're going for you. I said what a typical newcomer says. I go, they don't even know where I'm at. He said, hey, Don, if you're going to live free, you got to live free of some of this wreckage. We can't give you rides forever. You got to clean up your warrants. You got to get a driver's license. You got to get a car, man, so you can help the next guy coming in. And I said, because now I'm an expert on the steps, we're not even on the ninth step yet. And he goes, well, for you, we're going to make an exception. Be ready at 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock the next morning, I'm standing in front. My sponsor comes, and there he is. And it's bad enough that he's making me go to court. I get in his truck. He's in the best mood I've ever seen him in, bar none, smiling the ear to ear, whistling. And I haven't slept all night because I'm going to jail. That's what my head told me. And we're driving, and he's singing and whistling and glancing over at me and smiling and giving me the thumbs up, and we're going down to court. And finally he says, God, Don, I got to tell you, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, oh, I was in a lot of trouble. Now you're in trouble. This is better. Really, that's a short message of the program. We came to Alcoholics Anonymous. We were in a lot of trouble. We worked some steps. We found a God of our own understanding. We got sponsors. We did the things we did around here. And this is better. This is better. And I went to court, you know, and the beautiful thing about sponsorship, I don't even have to know what to do in that situation. My sponsor walked me through. He got my name in the docket, and he told me what to say when it was my turn. Those weren't my words. You know, waited for a couple hours, and they call my name, and I stand up, and I'm in my little Salvation Army suit that I bought the day before for court, you know, trying to look like a respectable alcoholic. And the judge is looking at me, and he's rustling the paperwork, and he says, you're late. 4 years. and they ask you for an explanation, and I told the judge what my sponsor said to say. I filled my lungs with air. I looked the judge right in the eye, and I said, Your Honor, till 4 months ago, I was drinking myself to death on a daily basis. I've been fortunate enough to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am here through sponsor direction to clean up the wreckage of my past. Whatever the court deems necessary for that to occur, I will do so willingly. Because I know it's coming, because I've been up all night. I'm grandiose. I've been up all night thinking, you know, I got a picture of a judge in my head grabbing a gavel and swing going, we've been waiting for you, boy, you know, because I just know. And I didn't skate. I didn't get out of trouble, you know. I had to pay back an obscene amount of money and do a ridiculous amount of community service at the Salvation Army. I did so much community service that when I was done, they threw me a party. And And you would think that getting a little bit of that wreckage handled, you know, you drag this cart of wreckage in with you, you just bent over under the weight of your life, you know. And I mean, what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous is for years I've been running away from my life, driving 100 miles away from my life, from my wreckage, from the consequences. And I hit the wall of AA and all that stuff comes in the back seat and almost cuts you in half. And I hear newcomers say it all the time, and I said it too. I'm sober now, everything's getting worse. And it's like, yeah, it should be. All that stuff you've been running from, guess what? It just showed up. Because when you stop running and you put down stakes and you put down roots and you put your head above the hedge of life and you go, okay, enough's enough, no more running. This is where I make a stand. This is where the battle begins. Right here in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not alone. I got a home group. I got a sponsor. They know stuff. And they got my back. They told me they'll go through hell for me. They just said they wouldn't go to hell with me. But they said they got my back. And I made my stand for my life in Alcoholics Anonymous because my sponsor told me quit running. He said, make a stand. The battle of your life begins today. He goes, think of the worst street fight you've ever been in your life. He goes, that's nothing compared to what you're about to go through. Because you're going to take on alcoholism, and it ain't going to let you go. What, you think the train pulls into the station, and you get off, and it waves bye-bye and goes chugging down the tracks? Bullshit. They think you're coming back. Your head's going to be in the corner every day waiting for you to wake up doing push-ups. And when you wake up, it's going to tell you, oh, good, you're up? Let's talk. You're a loser, Don. And he warned me about alcoholism and what to expect early in recovery. He said, you have no recovery. You have physical sobriety. Recovery is when you work the steps, and it's going to take a little time to get through there. And then he took me into the book, and he showed me that until that point in the ninth step, I was going to be on thin ice. I said, what do I do? Then what do I do? He said, you get in the middle of the room, and you pull all of us around you. We'll make sure you don't fall off the edge. Nobody's going to get you if we're there, but you better stay close. He goes, we're just like a pack, Don. We're like a pack of caribou. You know, the wolves never get the caribou in the middle. They only get the stragglers and the ones on the edge. He goes, don't be on the edge. And he taught me the importance about being in the middle of the room in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was here many years before I realized that all my sponsor and all the sponsors I've had ever since, have all he really tried to do in AA is get me in the middle of the room. All these actions have nudged me closer and closer to dead center in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And why is that important? Why do you want to be in the middle of the room in Alcoholics Anonymous? You want to be a big shot in AA? I think I covered that. You want people to think well of you? Who cares about that? Or you just want to be sober? There's people that can stay sober without doing that. I don't know what kind of alcoholic you are. I want to tell you what kind I am. I have bad days. I have days where my head's absolutely out to kill me. I remember about 3 years ago, I was doing nothing in particular, nothing seemingly dangerous, but for an alcoholic, it's the most dangerous thing you can do. I was thinking. I was 15 years sober, sponsored about 10 guys. Went to 4 meetings a week with commitments, spoke all over the country, active at the service level, and I knew better than to think, yet I was thinking. Had a little spare time on my hand, I'm in the kitchen, I'm just thinking. And I thought for about 5 minutes, and I had to ask my wife a question. So I went to the stairs, and I called up, I said, hey, honey. And she calls out, what? I go, you planning on divorcing me anytime soon? And she goes, not that I'm aware of. I said, thanks for the information. I was just thinking. You know, that's what my head does. I don't know about you, but to me, if I want to screw my day up, this is the perfect formula. Schedule about 15 minutes without God and without a sponsor. I'm going to sit back on the couch, I'm going to cross my legs, and I'm just going to consider all the areas of my life. I don't think how I'm doing in business, how that marriage is going, how those ungrateful guys I sponsor are doing, you know, am I really? And I'm telling you, at the end of it, it never comes out good. My head is not my friend, nor do I think it ever will be. And I have bad days occasionally, and some of those thoughts that I have and some of those things that happen to me between my ears, this very head that you see sitting here right now, the most dangerous thing I own, you know, where I know my thoughts should be for amusement only today, I know that. I get nudged towards the door. I get moved from the center, and I get nudged towards the door a little bit. Because I'll tell you, when you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you come in here and you raise your hand, you say, I'm an alcoholic, well, welcome aboard. You've joined the tribe. But once you're here, you're going to take one or two sets of actions, and they're so different, you can set them other sides of the room. And I see them taken in Alcoholics Anonymous every day. But they're so different, you can't believe they're part of the same program. Now, you can take the actions that I were taught. You're going to go, and you're going to have commitments to the meetings you attend. You're going to get involved in service. You're going to have a sponsor. You're going to sponsor other people. You're going to work the steps. And all that crap will do, it'll make you happy, joyous, and free. Why would you want that? Why would you want to be happy? Why would you want your imagination to be fired and have the greatest years of your life lay ahead? Why would you want that? Why would you want to be in the middle of the room, safe, centered, and protected? But if you do that stuff, that's what's going to happen. Life will take on new meaning. You'll feel purposeful. You'll feel joyous. You'll feel like you're a man that has an answer, that you can actually go help the next person. Or you can take the other set of actions I've seen around here. And there's people here in Alcoholics Anonymous who will tell you, you don't have to work the steps, they're suggested. And I don't read the book, and I stayed sober 7 years. And you don't have to sponsor people. And I don't like to take commitments at meetings because I like to go and take a hike on the weekend. And I don't really do that stuff. You know, and all that stuff, all that self-centered behavior that we bring into Alcoholics Anonymous, all it really does is keep us by the door. And one day the winds of life come up, and they're gone. And it breaks our heart because it didn't have to happen. It didn't have to happen. I'm going to read you something else in the book. It'll be the last thing I read. I'm not much of a reader here, but I thought it was apropos. There's something that's quoted in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot, and I call it one of the biggest loophole quotes in Alcoholics Anonymous, because people use this to explain why they don't go to meetings, and they use it to explain why they don't sponsor people, and they use it to explain why they don't do service work, and they use it to explain why they don't get on committees, and they use it to explain why it's okay for new people to come here and have nobody to greet them, so they go back to the grinder and die. And this is what they use to explain it. It's on page 19. It says, none of us, that's everybody in this room, none of us make a sole vocation of this work. Well, sounds good so far, huh? If you're a taker, that sounds pretty good. Nor do we think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. It's right in the book. We feel that elimination of our drinking is but a beginning. A much more important demonstration of our principles lies before us in our respective homes, occupations, and affairs. And that's where they stop quoting. And these are the people that have comforted themselves going, hey, you know what? I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to sit in meetings all the time, work with a bunch of sick newcomers. You know, I got a life I have to live. You know, I practice these principles. I work a damn good program. My home, occupations, and affairs. Why don't you read the book? It says none of us make a sole vocation of this work. It says that we don't even think its effectiveness would be increased if we did. Nobody in this room is being asked to make this their sole vocation. But I want you to be able to understand, if you're going to read that part, you better read the rest of it. And what follows us after that is it says this. All of us, that's everyone in this room, all of us spend much of our spare time in the sort of effort which we are going to describe. What my book tells me is if I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, much of my spare time is supposed to be about my heart and my mind attuned to the welfare of others. That I'm supposed to care about the man or woman coming in that room and make sure that Alcoholics Anonymous that I found here is here for them. That is what this thing is about. Now, I'm not here to lecture you and make you feel bad, but I want you to understand something, that as alcoholics, we have a gift. And it's a very funny gift, you know. It's the very gift that almost killed you. It's going to become your most important asset. The page before that on page 18, and they do this in italics and build this because I guess it's very important. And it says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can genuinely win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. Nobody does it better than us. They don't do it better in the treatment centers. They don't do it better in counseling. They don't do it better in the psychiatric community. They don't do it better in the medical community. Our families will be the first ones to admit they couldn't help us. Our employers will be the first ones to admit they couldn't help us. Nobody does it better than the people sitting in this room. You, right there, the person sitting next to you, the person sitting behind you, the person sitting in front of you, are uniquely qualified to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. If you're new and people tell you you don't have anything to offer, go talk to somebody else. My sponsor told me if I had 2 days, go help the guy with 1 day. I was 6 months sober, and I went on a 12-step call. His first 12-step call I went with, and went with another guy who was 6 months, and a guy with 14 years. Bob, how are we doing on time? What does that mean? 6 minutes left?
No, 10 or 12.
10 or 12? Okay. 3 stamps for 5? Okay. So I go on this 12-step call. And there's Donnie. And Donnie's sitting there, and Donnie's got half a fifth of Jack Daniels sitting in front of him. He's a little bleary-eyed. And he called us, you know, and Donnie's kind of telling us why he shouldn't finish that fifth of Jack Daniels. And we told Donnie, that's not what we do. You want a drink, that's your business. You don't want a drink, that's our business. And so we hit him with our best 12-step stuff, you know. And the guy with 14 years just was awesome, you know, just lit him up. It was beautiful. It was like great stuff. And then me and Greg, my buddy, we gave him our best 6-month stuff, you know, which wasn't much. And like, It's like, dude, I don't even know what I'm doing, but I haven't drank in 6 months. What do you want? You know, it's like, I'm confused by it all, but I haven't drank. It's pretty amazing. Pretty cool. So we leave there, and I think we didn't help Donnie, you know. Donnie's like, see you later. And he's just some screw in the cap, and I'm like, ah, this isn't going to work. And I'm thinking, why do we do that? And the guy with 14 years explains, we do this to ensure our own sobriety. We go and work with other alcoholics. We carry the message, not the mess. What he does with the message is between him and God, but we carry the message, and we stay out of the results. And the next day, Donnie calls me. And he goes, hey, some of the things you said last night made sense. Where's that meeting? So I tell him where it's at. I go, do we need to come get you? He goes, no, I'm not drinking and I can drive. And so Donnie goes to the meeting. I'm thinking, pretty good. He showed up at the meeting. So after the meeting, Donnie walks up to me and he says, hey, I want to ask you something. Will you be my sponsor? And I said what every guy with 6 months, you know, always says. I go, let me talk to my sponsor. And so I run over to my sponsor and I go, hey, this guy, Donnie, this guy I told you about the 12-step call, he showed up tonight. Now he asked me to be his sponsor. He goes, what'd you tell him? I told him I had to talk to you. And he got mad again. He said, let me get this straight. This guy's brand new. He was drinking last night. He's detoxing. Somehow God allowed him to get to the meeting. He garnered up all the strength he had left, which is probably very little, made that 400-mile journey across the meeting room floor to ask you for help, and you said you'd get back to him? Go tell him yes, you selfish bastard. And I was like, okay, and I go over and I tell Donnie, I'll sponsor him, right? I don't know what I'm doing. And I say to my sponsor, I go, what do? I don't know. He goes, I haven't even been through all the steps. He goes, you take him through the steps you've been through. If you don't know what to do, you ask his permission to take his problem to me, and if I don't know what to do, we'll take it to my sponsor. Don't worry about it. It works out. He goes, you don't have to know anything. God runs AA. If you ran AA, we'd all be dead. Don't worry about it. So I start working with Donnie. And right away, I noticed something, because there were a lot of literature studies where I got sober, you know, a lot of reading involved, you know, and what we do, read a couple of paragraphs, pass to the next guy. And every time it's Donnie's turn, Donnie passes. This goes on, you know, I'm cutting him a little slack, you know, he's brand new. After about the third meeting, I go, well, you know, I'm a sponsor, I got to say something. I pull him aside. I say, Donnie, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't pass, we participate in our own recovery. When it's your turn to read, you got to read. Donnie looks down on the floor and lowers his voice, and he goes, I don't read so good. In fact, I don't really know how to read. You know what's funny out there in the world? You do something like that, and you feel terrible, don't you? You feel all embarrassed. Oh, my God, I embarrassed myself terrible. Not in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you got your hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others, what that means is you're constantly in a position of excitement. Who can I help? What do I have that you need? I don't have any money, but I'm strong. I can lift that couch, you know, and you're looking for things that... Like Clancy used to say, Don, you're very valuable because you have a weak mind and a strong back. You know, doesn't matter what you have, it's valuable here. And I didn't feel bad and I wasn't embarrassed. And I said to Donnie, it just the most natural thing came out of my mouth. I said, Donnie, I can read. I can read. I was so excited. I go, Donnie, I can read. I said, I can show you. I don't have a teaching degree. I don't know anything about it. How hard can it be, right? I'm thinking, right? I got a book. We'll use the book, right? So every night after AA, we go to Donnie's house. And we sit and we read the book. And we have a dictionary there. I taught him how to use a dictionary. So when I wasn't there, he could look up words. And I explained to him what they meant. And I showed him how to use it. And we did this for month after month after month after month. The long form of the story, or really the end of all this, is all you need to know is Donnie's 17 and a half years sober today. And Donnie, if you heard him reading the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or saw him read a newspaper out loud or anything else, you would know that Donnie didn't know how to read at one time in his life as an adult. And that's not a big unusual occurrence in Alcoholics Anonymous, because all it was is Donnie came to Alcoholics Anonymous with something in life that a lot of people could do that he couldn't do. It's not about the reading. It's just something in life that other people can do. They take for granted. Everybody can do it. And he couldn't do it and had great shame about it. Is Alcoholics Anonymous a reading program? But we learn to read here, don't we? And we learn to work here, and we learn to live here, and we learn to love here, and we learn to be husbands and fathers and sons and citizens and all these things that you might think, look, I don't get involved with those areas, but I'll tell you, when I sponsor the men I sponsor, there are no boundaries. I made a sacred oath with the men I sponsor. And if you come into my sponsorship family, I take that as an honor and a privilege. You're asking me to help you. You're asking me to come on board. You're trusting me with your alcoholism, which means you're trusting me with your life. You're thinking that I have something that you want. And I have to take you through this book. I owe you that. My first sponsor said, if I owe you nothing less, I owe you the truth. And he always told me the truth. He wasn't interested in me liking him. He wasn't interested in being my friend. He could have cared less. I remember the arguments we would have. I just could not get a rise out of the guy most of the time. He'd say, do it or get another sponsor. I remember that's how I got car insurance for the first time. I was finally driving again. I paid off. I cleared up the warrants. I got a driver's license. You know, it's a funny thing about these little things that happen to us. You know, when you spend most of your life in a negative column of life, and then you get something as powerful as Alcoholics Anonymous, and it cleans you up, and it puts you in the positive column, you know, it's like you can't put it on a resume, like, how, you know, how excited I was when I got my driver's license. And that was sponsor direction, too, because I wasn't going to get one. I said, I'm never going to get one. And he goes, go down and apply. Just go down. And I walked out with a driver's license. I thought he was the genius. Just a genius. And what really happened, because I had a sponsor who was willing to intervene on my behalf in my life, is I got to be wrong about everything. You see, we read chapter 5, a portion of chapter 5 at all, most of our meetings we attend, and we talk about the result being nil until we let go absolutely. We have to let go of those old ideas. And all the old ideas that I brought in Alcoholics Anonymous were going to kill me dead in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what a sponsor allowed me to do was tell me, he told me powerful spiritual things like this. Don, it's okay, it's all right to feel that way. You're just wrong. You're just wrong, buddy. And I was like, really? I'm really wrong? He goes, yeah, you're really wrong, you know? And then he would tell me what to do instead, and my life would get better. And I get that opportunity to do that with the men that I sponsor. I get to tell them, it's okay, man. It's okay. Being wrong is a part of life. And today, 18 years later, when I find out I'm wrong about something, it was the worst thing in the world when I was new. Oh, no, I'm wrong. Now I get excited. Like, I'm wrong. This is awesome because I know change is about to happen. Something good's about to happen. Do you know I've never changed anything when I'm right? Ever. I've never said, God, I'm right about this. I think I'll do it differently. Never. It's only when I'm wrong do I have an opportunity to change anything. And I'm so grateful for a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that introduced me to something as powerful as a tool is sponsorship. Because I'll tell you what, I have a great relationship with God today. I was introduced to that by my sponsor. I have worked all the steps and they produce a psychic change within me. I don't feel, react, or think the way that I used to on a continuous basis. I'm pretty comfortable with myself most of the time. But that was all directed by a sponsor. And I'll tell you what, if the steps don't work and a loving, all-powerful God isn't just that, what's the point? What's the big deal about sponsorship? My God, Don, you've been here 18 years. How many times have you been through the steps? How many guys have you taken through the steps? Why do you still call your sponsor every day? Why do you still do that? You know, they taught me that very early in sobriety, not to make any major decisions without talking to a sponsor. And I still follow that, and it saves me from myself. And this is why. Because of the steps and because of the relationship I have with God, I'd say about 90% of the time living my life, I'm right on the money. Right on the money, absolutely right. It's that 10% I don't know about. Because I don't know which 10% it is. Because it all seems right to me. And I do that thing they taught me when I was new. I call it my sponsor on a regular basis. I run my life by him. I go, this is what's going on. I prayed about it. I did some 10-step work. This is what I came up with. This is what I'm going to do. 90% of the time, he goes, hey, sounds like you did the work. Sounds like you're on board. Sounds good to me. Go ahead and take the action. But about 10% of the time, he'll say, hey, man, did you think of that on your own, or did you have help? And that seems to make a tremendous difference in my life. And I'll tell you what. Having that asset in my corner, having a guy that I know is in my corner, that knows me, that I've been transparent with, is one of the most valuable tools I have. When I call up my sponsor, I'm telling you, we don't have to talk for very long for him to know what's going on with me, because he's been there for me. And I don't shop answers. I don't talk to a lot of guys about the really deep stuff. I got one guy, one voice that I'm transparent with. But because of that transparency with this one guy, 100%, a non-negotiability about the transparency, I'm now able to be transparent with other men. And I'm able to be transparent with the men I sponsor. And one of the greatest things that I have in my sponsorship family with the guys that I work with is I am very willing to let them see me warts and all. I'm not trying to be an example of better than. I'm not trying to make them think that I'm well. I want them to understand that you can have a whopping case of alcoholism which resides mainly in your mind and you can still live with dignity and enthusiasm and joy. That you can wake up some mornings and want to, you know, just see your head in the corner going, again? We're going to do this again? Okay, and you screw your head on and you go, you can do this all you want. I'm not listening. And you can shower and you can go to work. You know, and some days are like that. And explain to the guys that, look, it's alcoholism. It's not alcohol, you know, wasm. It's alcoholism, you know. And let them know that we all go through this, but we go through it together. and let them reduce their uniqueness. And I'm going to close with this, and I'm going to quote Clancy because I think it's the best example of him talking about sponsorship or Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever heard. It's very brief. Clancy says, in its purest form, Alcoholics Anonymous will always be one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic to reduce his feelings of difference so he can start to take actions he does not yet believe in. Thanks for listening.